genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. It's smart talk for interesting subjects. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. And you'll want to keep that number handy because in our first segment, we're going to invite listeners to call in with their thoughts on the subject of the day. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is an examination of consumption in America. All of my guests have interesting subjects on different sides of the consumption issue. In the first segment, we're going to be talking about something that's in the news today, and I'll be riffing on that with you over the, for the next 20 minutes or so. Then my second guest examines the credo of the second half of the 20th century into the first half of the 21st century, which is faster, cheaper, better. She understands the nine levers of transforming how work gets done. We'll discuss thinking outside the cost as manufacturers reevaluate further increases in productivity in this economy. My third guest thinks we have too much stuff, possibly brought on by my second guest's efforts to make things faster, cheaper, better. We'll examine the pattern of overconsumption in the United States and project its impact on the future from her book, The Story of Stuff. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. And now for today's story. Leading the top of the news today, S&P, that Standard & Poor's, downgraded its outlook on the United States for the future from neutral to negative yesterday. And of all the days to do it, they did it on tax day, the day that the taxes are due to the government. So why is this thing so important? Why is a downgrade by S&P so vital to us? Well, for one thing, it's a barometer of how business views the United States economy in the future. Standard & Poor's being one of the large reporting agencies, and they take the pulse of the business community that's out there. So why is what's at the heart of this problem? Well, the heart of the problem right now is the rising U.S. debt. The S&P projects that the United States will have a difficult time meeting its financial obligations when nearly half of its GDP will be used to pay back interest on debt to investors. And that was the reason behind their downgrade from negative or from neutral to negative on the U.S. economy for the months and weeks ahead. If you've got a thought on this, give us a call at 639-0008. I'd love to bring you on the air and hear your thoughts on this as well. Why should we care that S&P has downgraded its outlook on the United States? Well, for one thing, it's a sign that the United States investors are acknowledging the debt crisis facing this country. Before yesterday, savvy investors knew that a debt crisis existed, but they treated it as benign, somehow believing that we'd find a way to innovate our way out of the crisis. The S&P was a ringing of the bell saying, nope, the crisis is here, and businesses, as well as citizens, need to pay attention to it. Now, a bigger question might be, why should we believe Standard & Poor's? After all, the reason that there's reason to be skeptical about Standard & Poor's' downgrade. Standard & Poor's was one of the rating agencies that was involved in rating the mortgage-backed securities. S&P rated these securities backed by subprime mortgages too highly as a rating, and ultimately this overrating of the underlying mortgages is what precipitated the financial collapse of 2007 and 2009. So you might call into question, why believe S&P in the first place? So why should S&P be entrusted on their downgrade? Well, it's not much of a matter of trust as much as it's a matter of reach. Whether you believe S&P or not, S&P and the other rating agencies are hardwired into the system. That means a ripple by Standard & Poor's gets picked up not only by the business media, but it gets picked up and amplified. S&P is wired into the financial media and the mainstream media. So any move that Standard & Poor's makes is widespread and pervasive. The story will be reported for a long time to come. And because an S&P story is so widespread, it would take a long time to unwind the story if the story was only partially correct. So it really doesn't matter if you believe in Standard & Poor's downgrade or don't believe in the Standard & Poor's downgrade. The fact that they did it is what's going to have major ripple effects throughout the economy. Now the fear cycle on debt has begun. What will be the reaction of Congress and the President? That's going to be important. Will the looming battle in Congress over the debt ceiling, the spending cuts, the tax increases, and improving the United States budget be amplified by the Standard & Poor's downgrade? We're going to have to see about that, but that is going to make all of the discussion about the upcoming deficit ceiling much, much more important. In her recent book, Mary Meeker, who's a partner at Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers, says that if we viewed the United States like a company and had business people evaluate it based on the financial statements, no prudent business person would invest in the United States without a healthy premium for risk. And read that to mean much higher interest rates. Of course, Mary Meeker's thesis is flawed. The United States government is not like a business. The government has an ability to do two things that a business cannot do. First of all, the government can print money to keep itself solvent. And secondly, a government can raise revenues by raising taxes. Still, the analysis shouldn't be dismissed totally. You should take some thought and think about Mary Meeker's comments. We should treat the United States more like a business than we do like a country. What are the signposts telling us? Well, the message is becoming clear. Business, and Wall Street in particular, is turning away from the current government position on the economy. And without full-fledged cooperation of business and Wall Street, the government's going to have a difficult time executing any type of turnaround in the economy. So what's this got to do with you as you're listening to the sound of my voice? What can you do about it? You're just one person. Well, there's plenty that you can do about it. First, be aware of what's going on. Not only listen to what I say, but obviously read the newspapers, listen to the television news, go online, see what there is to see. But the truth is that the debt story is becoming a bigger story, and people are going to start to pay more attention to it now that Standard & Poor's has lowered its rating of the United States. Secondly, something that you can do, go out and vote. Only 26% of you voted in the last election. That means if I take 1 out of 10 listeners randomly from the audience, only 3 of them would have voted in the last election. 7 did not. Now, the newspaper, the Star, reports that if we got good voter turnout, it might be as high as 48%. And they laud that accomplishment. They think it's great. That means that we're pleased when less than half of the voters take part in an election. And that means that decisions affecting everyone and everyone's lives are made by less than half of the people affected by the decisions. That should be troubling, and that alone should be reason for you to get out and vote at the polls. But voting is something that you can certainly do to help this situation. Third, get involved. Being involved can mean many things. It doesn't mean you have to be active politically. Donate your time, your talent, your money to a worthy charitable cause. Help out a stranger. Perform a random act of kindness. Perform better at work. Be more efficient. Be more effective. In short, do something. Change it up. Be more active in whatever you do. Put a little energy, a spark, into whatever you do, and that will help to not only pick up the economy, but hopefully change the situation around you. If you have any ideas, or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, that's area code 805-639-0008. Now, before we move on to our next guest, I want to do one thing, and that is promote the webpage, brainstorminonline.com. That's where I keep the archives of all of my old interviews. You can find them up there, and you can listen to them at your convenience. They're all stored and recorded up there. I interview thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and our local community. And some of my best work is up there. Some in my interviews with Carol Burnett, Steve Forbes, Dan Rather, you can find them all on brainstorminonline.com. And the activity to the website is picking up, so I thank you all very much for going to the website and listening to those past interviews, because each month I see the numbers rising and rising and rising. So if you're interested in show business, you might be interested in Carol Burnett, as I said, Suzanne Summers, Wayne Rogers, Stephanie Powers, John Tesh. These are all people that I have interviewed in the past, and you find them up on my website, brainstorminonline.com. I've also interviewed Graham Carr, Blythe Danner, Wink Martindale, Gary Owens, Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees, Peter Tork of the Monkees, Shirley Jones of the Partridge Family, and of course Broadway fame as well. If that's not your thing, if you're more into the business and you want to know more about the business world, I've interviewed Steve Forbes, I've interviewed Pat Robertson, interestingly enough, on the subject of business. Seth Godin, Maria Bartiromo, Aaron Burnett from CNBC, Melissa Francis of CNBC, Bob Pisani of CNBC, Julia Boorstin, Jane Wells, Peter Greenberg, all folks that I have interviewed on the show, and you'll find the interviews on Brainstorming Online. If you're into other things, you're just into celebrities in general, Dan Rather, Pat Summerall, interviewed Don Rumsfeld just a few weeks ago, Carol Channing, Guy Kawasaki. One of the more interesting interviews was Senator Scott Brown, the Republican from Massachusetts who took over the seat from Ted Kennedy. Fred Thompson, who used to have his own talk radio show, noted conservative. Bill Rasmussen, the man who founded ESPN. Chris Hillman of the Byrds, who lives right here in Ventura County. Peter Noon, Kathy Ireland, who lives up the road in Santa Barbara. And Rush Limbaugh's brother, David Limbaugh. All of these guests and more are up on the site, Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. In fact, I do about 3 interviews live each day, and that means in any given month I'm doing about 66 interviews all stored up there. But the big news is this, that coming soon, you're going to be able to find my interviews on iTunes. You'll be able to download Brainstorming, take it with you on your iPod, your iPhone, your iPad, or any mobile device. So that means if you can't listen to the show live each and every day, you can go to iTunes, download the interviews, take them with you on your iPod, go to the gym, listen to them while you're working out, take them with you, load them up in your car, listen to them while you're driving to or from work in the car, because they'll be available on iTunes in the near future. So you want to pay attention to that. Also, as you go to my website, you'll note that I've got notes on each of the guests that I have, and those notes sort of a peek into the workings of the brain of Brainstorming with Billy the Brain, and that will give you sort of a behind-the-scenes look at what it is that what I'm thinking and some of the questions that I'm asking the interviewees as I do. We've got a caller on the line, Rick from Newberry Park. Hi, Rick. How are you today?
Good morning, Bill. I'm well, thank you. How are you, sir?
Terrific, and good morning. Thanks for being a caller and a loyal listener to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. What's on your mind today?
You bet. I tell you what, you know, this is a great topic for this morning. I've spoken to a number of friends of mine around the world, and they view Americans that we are now, you know, coming up to the table of getting our comeuppance a little bit, and that some of them feel that we're the spoiled little brat of the world. At 235 years old, with our abundance and sense of entitlement or even arrogance, what would be your thought if we were to reduce our reduction of aid? What do you think the ramifications of reducing international contributions to other countries?
It's a very intriguing point, and there are a lot of people right here at home, Rick, who would agree with that and say, why are we sending money overseas when we need help right here in the United States?
Agreed. I read this report yesterday. It says that we are borrowing 43 cents of every dollar that we spend now in our federal government. And I know that I'm thinking if we were to reduce maybe for 10 to 20 years, our contribution to, this would be a flashpoint, but like Israel or Brazil or even Mexico, because it just seems that we send so much, and we want to be everybody's policeman. And if there is a terrible, like a tsunami. We're the first ones in there.
Well, that's an interesting point. You bring up a couple of flashpoint countries, so I'm going to stay away from the countries for just a moment, Rick. But I do want to talk about the subject in general. The American people are one of the most generous peoples on the planet. We give a lot when there's a tsunami like there was in Japan. We are the first online. We were the first there in Haiti when the catastrophe earthquake happened down there as well.
And we are very, very fortunate.
Oh, and we make no bones about that, and I think our people realize that we have to give back in some small way, and so when these catastrophes happen, we're first on board to help out as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. As a country, interestingly enough, the United States is not so highly ranked among the G20 countries in terms of giving. Germany, even some of the Scandinavian countries give a higher percentage of their GDP to international aid than the United States does.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you want to take a look into that. But Germany is there in a lot of countries that the United States has no part in. Also, because the European countries had colonies in Africa, a lot of their aid will go to the African countries that were once their colonies. And so a lot of that flies under the radar of what we would track here in the United States on a regular basis. So it doesn't get reported by the news media. But now to your point or to your question, and that is cut back on international aid. In the United States, international aid has been used as a political tool.
Yeah.
Not that it hasn't in other countries. It certainly has in these other countries as well. But we use it sort of like a sledgehammer with countries to say, get on board and get with the program, and then, of course, we'll give you some aid. Or, in other cases, we use it trying to buy friendship in parts of the world where we're not considered so friendly.
Okay.
And both of those are laudable goals. There's something that we should aim for because we need to build up our world reputation because just of the clout that we carry in the world. So we need to have a certain amount of that. Can we cut back on all of that financial aid, and what would be the ramifications if we do?
Mm-hmm.
And let's just pick a target country and not a flashpoint country like you're talking about, but say a neutral country somewhere in Africa. If we were to pull back our aid there, which wouldn't necessarily be devastating to the economy, but it would certainly hurt, there would be others that would rush in to fill that void, and notably China and possibly even India would help out there. And their goals would be not altruistic by any stretch of the imagination. Theirs would be purely economic, as China is trying to buy up large swaths of Africa for the resources that are there. So aid would flow to these countries. It would just flow from other sources. And do we want the aid flowing from China into Africa or some other country? Or do we want it flowing from the United States, where we have a little bit more control over the political aims?
Well, I tell you what, I know you're getting a lot more calls on this, so I will let you go. But certainly, Billy, you are the brain.
Ah, Rick, thank you. You're too kind. And thank you for being a loyal listener here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Be well.